listening to The People's Show.
You come at the King, you best not miss.
Left circle, Besser, one time slot shot, he scores. Brock Besser beats Jordan Binnington on the power play, and the Canucks are up 4-0.
With Seth, Dan, and Randeep.
The biggest thing to hit Canada because the Maple Leafs suck.
On the official home of the Canucks.
Goes all the way down the ice, here's Pettersson after it. He's got a chance at a breakaway. Pettersson in clean, is tripped by Murray, but he scores. Tiki Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
Sportsnet 650.
Welcome, citizens of the People's Show. We come to you live on Sportsnet 650 on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. It's Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda, the People's Show with you until 7 o'clock. You listen on Sportsnet 650. You listen online, player.sportsnet650.ca, on the Sportsnet app, anytime, anywhere around the world, and on demand at your listening pleasure, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, your favorite podcatcher. Subscribe, leave a review, bang a follow button, whatever you need to do to become a citizen of the People's Show. We do appreciate it. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. We cannot be the People's Show without you, the people. That's how you get in touch with us and send in your hot takes, your deep reaches, whatever it may be, on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Coming up, David Pignota will join us after 4 o'clock. 5 o'clock, Harmon Dial. 5:30, Axel Schuster, the Whitecaps hiring Vanni Sartini for a couple of years. And Mark Schofield, our Tuesday NFL QB Insider, joins us after 6 o'clock.
I think we can all, as a community, say, Andiamo!
Andiamo!
Vanny is back.
I think Vanny could, like, give the Canucks a bit of a pep talk when he returns to Vancouver, when they return to Vancouver.
Absolutely. I think that game against the Penguins on Saturday, pre-hockey night. Imagine, like, Sportsnet getting a camera into that pregame pep talk.
Yep.
I'd love to see that. I think Vanny could do it.
Ma, who's this guy, Sidney Crosby, huh? Andiamo, go get it, huh? That's it.
Die. I'm sure the Canucks are thinking about doing this.
Una espresso, and you're good. That's it. All right.
And the Canucks won.
And the Canucks won last night.
Everything's looking up for Milhouse.
A good night in Montreal. That's the recipe that you asked for last week, wasn't it, Randeep? One good night in Montreal could do the team really well.
I got, you know, my mentions were just filling up yesterday with people saying, Randeep, you were right. One night in Montreal, and look at that. If there is a slump buster, it is definitely Montreal.
One night in Montreal, far better than one night in Winnipeg.
Yeah, one night in Montreal, you're like, I never want to leave. One night in Winnipeg, you're going to ask yourself, how do I survive this?
Yes.
How do I leave?
Unless you're at the One Earls, which is apparently really good. In Winnipeg.
There's always an Earls.
There's always an Earls. Even in Winnipeg. But Canucks getting the win.
What are you talking about? Especially in Winnipeg, man.
I mean, I don't know. That's the one Obi talked about. That's the one our text line was talking about. I don't know. One night in Winnipeg, one night at Earls. I don't know.
For all this slander, I feel like we have to do the People Show from Winnipeg one day. Make it happen, travel company.
Live on location. We'll bring in Jamie Thomas for couple of brewskis as well. All right, enough of that. We're going to talk Elias Pettersson. I know it's been a big topic on the station through the course of the day. Had the goal last night. Good to see Pettersson on the score sheet. Still doesn't have a 5-on-5 goal, mind you, this year. But we'll dive into his progress a little bit later on in the show. But I tweeted out at @DanRiccio_ a little bit earlier the topic we would be starting with today. And given that the winds of change are blowing in Vancouver, I thought it topical. And we kind of touched on these sorts of things a little bit yesterday on the show. You can go back and listen on podcast. But it seems to be an understanding that there will be a new GM in place at some point here in Vancouver, given how poor this start has been. When that happens, still very much up in the air as the Canucks continue their search for new leadership, you would think. So, what is that first move the new GM would make? Let's say you, Randeep Janda, are taking over GM duties with the Vancouver Canucks. What is your first move?
My first move is sitting down with Brock Besser and figuring out what that next contract looks like. And the reason I say that is he's on pace for 32 points this year.
Yep.
A significant step back from last year where, yes, he was the leading point getter for this team. But you want a surety of what that value with this player is. Because if you look at that $7.5 million that he's making in real money this year in the qualifying offer, guys, that is something that you don't really want to get into that realm right now. You don't want to be stepping into that $7.5 million realm because you haven't seen that from him this year. And whether there's a nagging injury, whatever the case may be, Brock Besser hasn't looked great. So what is that value? What is the conversation going to be based around? And then you decide, all right, is this a piece for the future here in Vancouver, or do you start to leverage elsewhere? Because if the player has a certain number in mind, and that's where they're going to budge, they're not going to budge, you have to start looking at how can you address the rest of your roster. So to me, that $7.5 million is a problem number. You need clarity on that, where the player stands, and then you move forward. I know there's other contracts that you have to worry about as well, but the one that is right in front of you at this moment in this offseason is going to be the most important one, and that's why it's priority number one.
So if Brock is hesitant on a long-term discussion, is he trade bait at the deadline?
I think he is. I think he is. Based on the fact that you need to know that in the short term here. If the long-term future is not here and you're kicking the can down a road because you have had another mediocre season and the player wants to bet on himself, are you willing to take that at this point in time based on the fact that it's going to be a UFA in a couple of years? As an organization, you can't necessarily take that risk. So I want clarity on that situation.
It's different from the situations with Miller and Bo Horvat because those players are unrestricted free agents at the end of next season. You can't talk contracts technically with them right now. You can with Brock Besser because he's a restricted free agent at the end of this season. So you have the option to negotiate there. Technically, you do not with Bo Horvat or JT Miller. Maybe you can subtly try to figure out what the numbers may look like if there's some interest, but you're not supposed to be having those discussions until the player is a year out from an extension. So that is a big part of why you may go down this road with Brock. And I think it's super interesting that you would go down this road because there's a lot here, Randeep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're coming in as a GM, do you first look at who your coach, which coach you would want to put in place, what areas of the organization, maybe from a off the ice standpoint, you can upgrade that may set this team up for success a little bit more. But I think you're right on if you're coming in and you're 2 months out from the deadline, you've got to start thinking about what that deadline is going to look for this team and what pieces I might be willing to move in order to set this team up for next season, 2 years from now, whatever that plan looks like. You have to start thinking about that now and preparing for the trade deadline.
And to be clear, the reason I didn't mention the coach is because I think that is kind of a given at this point in time. So I think the coach would be one of the – it's probably tied to the GM position. So that's the reason I didn't really mention that. But when you talk about the Brock Besser conversation, if you can't agree on a number, if that long-term future does not stay here in Vancouver, if it's not a fit because he has had a bad year, you know, when I cite a 32-point season as the pace right now, that's how bad it's been. Now, beyond that, though, if you look at what the team needs to address. You talk about prospects are not there beyond a Vasily Podkolzin at this point in time.
Yep.
Right-hand D is also going to be a long-term concern, because what do you have coming up after what you've got in the NHL right now? It goes back to Jet Wu yet again. You don't have much coming there. So if we are looking at Besser is not a part of the future, if that is the conversation that happens and that's what happens over the next few months or whenever a position in power is able to have that conversation, you have to look at these weaknesses, because there are some significant ones down the road. Down the road, we saw Tucker Pullman yesterday play probably one of the worst games I've seen him ever play. That pass to Bo Horvat was brutal and led to a goal the other way. Him with the puck on his stick was just a tough watch last night. That is a pressing need right now in right-hand shot defenseman and in the future. So you're going to have to find a way to move some of these parts around and address some of those gaps.
Tucker Pullman with the puck is Clark Griswold in Christmas Vacation getting on the toboggan.
Wild ride, man.
It's a wild ride.
Okay, I tweeted this out yesterday, but it reminded me of Stanley from The Office, where he just couldn't dribble. Like, when he's got handles of the ball, right? He's just going off into a corner doing his own thing. It felt like Tucker Pullman does that.
Looks like Sean Marion's
free throw shooting?
Shooting technique.
Not
shoot
great.
From the hip. All right. Didn't look great, but somehow Sean Marion figured out how to make it work. In any case, let's bring the people in on this. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. You're GM of the Canucks. What's the first move you make? Casey in Delta. Casey, what's the first move you make?
Okay, guys, let me get right at it. First thing I do is I'm going to hire Yannick Hansen to be my spokesperson in some capacity.
Would you still let him be an analyst on the People Show and Sportsnet today?
Of course.
Okay, good.
Perfect. We're good then.
Then we're okay.
Then I'm going to get him I'm going to get in front of the fans and the ticket holders and let them know that what exactly the plan is going to be moving forward. If we by autonomy from ownership, let's going to pretend that's given. Then I'm going to obviously change the coach. And then I'll say right now, I'm going to go ahead and talk to two of the three people that I'm going to replace on this team and get rid of for.
All right, Casey, we gotta get you on a better phone line, but I think I get the gist of what you're saying, and it's setting this team up for more success and having more of a transparent group than this organization has had. You know, what is the plan? It's felt like they're living day to day, year to year. Jim Benning, we still play that clip on the show. And it's frustrated people to no end. And I think, you know, it's part and parcel with the day we live in. People want some level of transparency. They know when you're BSing them. And that is something you have to understand about your consumer base and do better by it moving forward. Of course, you can't lay out every single detail of your organization, but with Jim, it's always been the plan has never been adequately communicated, and it's often felt like it's fleeting. It changes all the time. Oh, we're 2 years away from being a real contender. A couple of days ago, he would not even answer that question. So we're really in a spot where I think a lot of people would appreciate whoever is taking this over have a little bit more transparency in how they want to take this organization forward.
Okay, I understand that opinion, but how much of that falls on the GM and how much of that falls on the ownership group, right? When you look at what New York did a few years ago, they had to get sign-off from the ownership group. I don't know where that idea came from. Was it James Dolan himself? Or was it Gorton and Davidson saying, no, we're going to be 100% honest? But you can guarantee that ownership had a role in that. Beyond that, when you look at other organizations, when they take that step about communicating a plan, it's done with complete buy-in. So I can understand why people are going after Jim Benning for saying, hey, why aren't you communicating this? But does that authority lay with him to okay that? Because if your plan is to reset and you want to be honest with your fan base, That's an easy plan to communicate. Jeff Molson did it the other day, saying, hey, we're going to move some things around. We're going to do a, you know, reconstructure some things. But that also falls on more than just one person, the GM. That's why, you know, some ownership groups, and look back to, you know, the days in Toronto when Lou Lamoriello was running it. That wasn't open. They didn't communicate anything. They didn't allow any availabilities. But they still turned it around because they were in a position that everybody knew they were rebuilding. Lou Lamoriello didn't have to say anything. So what the problem here has been here in Vancouver is that you don't necessarily know what the motive is. Is it to rebuild? Is it to retool? Is it to restock? This past year, we understood where it was coming from. But moving forward, it's going to be important. Communication hasn't been the greatest in this market going back a couple of years. But I think this is a very, very important time in this franchise's history because you can feel the anger. You can feel, to a certain level, the apathy. You can feel the moment of need is coming. It's here. But also the way that maybe the communication has worked in the past, that's maybe needs to change a little bit where you're communicating where your organization is going, right? Not just say, hey, we're back and we're going to spend money, but like long term, where are you going? How are you going to go about it? And I understand where that's where you're coming from, but it also requires the entire organization to think that way, just not one general manager.
Well, for my first move as GM, I think it's imperative that, look, and there's a lot of little things you can do, I think, to set this place up for more success, given some of the oversights, the thin front office. Now, there's things you can do, but that also depends on more commitment from ownership in those aspects. But that's another conversation. You have to figure out who are your guys here. Because one thing is abundantly clear, Randeep. This team is not good enough, right? As much as we all think they are better than what they have shown, and they are, they're still not good enough. And that means you have to make a significant change. So my first job is to assess who is that core piece I'm moving on from. Is it Brock? Talked about him. Contract situation may decide that. Do you really take a look at Bo or Miller? I know there's going to be a lot of people being like, trade Myers, trade this guy, trade OEL, trade. Be realistic. Those contracts are difficult to move. So of the guys that are going to bring you a massive return, it's a three-man list. It's Brock, it's Bo, it's Miller. And I think you have to assess that and decide if that's a move you are going to make ahead of the trade deadline. Because in all of those cases, maybe Brock excluded, this deadline is likely the spot where their returns are most valuable. You wait till the summer, well, team only gets one full year of control guaranteed. You wait till, or if you address that now, you can maybe look at the Blake Coleman type of return, potentially even more given Bo and Miller, I would say, are better players than a Blake Coleman. But Blake Coleman's under $2 million cap charge at the time.
Yeah.
Was a big part of the reason his return was as high as it ended up being to the Tampa Bay Lightning from the New Jersey Devils. But I think you have to look at one of those three and bring in the coveted young right shot D that this franchise has been missing for such a long period of time. And then you wonder if you can move a Hamonic or a Myers to make space for that young right shot D in your group.
Which shouldn't be that difficult depending on how much you can retain. And obviously with Hamonic's deal, he's going to be after this season, owed one more year, which is not the longest of contracts. But when we talk about those three players, I look at the two wingers first. And JT Miller, in this case, I'm going to consider him a winger because that's where he's played for the most part in Vancouver as the priority when you're talking about mm-hmm. the trade options, right? And JT Miller, not because he's a bad player, he's the best player, the best forward for the Canucks consistently this season. But that age, when he's done his contract, he's going to be 30 years of age. Do you want to, A, sign him beyond those years and potentially give him a long-term contract? And that's under the assumption that JT Miller would want to stay in Vancouver. How about if he doesn't? How about if he wants to go play in the States? How about if he decides that Vancouver had a good run? You don't want to take that chance. So when you're talking about the Brock Besser contract situation and JT Miller, those are the situations that I look at and say, yeah, you need clarity on, especially with JT, because if you don't make that move there, then you're looking at a situation where the player is going to leave anyways, or you're signing a player well into their 30s, mid to potentially even late 30s, and does that make sense? The Bo Horvat one, though, at this point in time, unless you're getting an unbelievable deal, I'm not even considering that, because I think we're undervaluing the importance of the 2C position on any team. He's not going to lead you in goal scoring or point scoring, but is he still contributing when he's right at least 50 points? He's even on pace for 50 points this year, and this year has been a garbage season. You need a solid 2C, and Bo Horvat is still going to be that for probably, at the very minimum, a half a decade.
Yeah.
So I think there is being some, you know, I understand the conversation. Is he going to sign here, all of that? But I'm not having that conversation until next year, and that's when you start having that comment. This year,
no, you have to have it at least in the summer. You've got to address.
Yeah, when there's 1 year left is when you have it. But this year, this deadline, heck no.
You have to address his upcoming free agency status in the summer and see where his head is at in terms of a long-term deal, what the number might look like, and then you assess from there. But honestly, like, if you get the big-time right shot D, like a big-time right shot D prospect plus a first-round pick, I think it is 100% the right thing to do to listen to any of those offers should they come at the deadline this year for any of these players. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. You're not good enough, and you know you're not good enough. So what are we waiting for? That's as hard as that is to do. And I know it's a very difficult thought process to get around, but I think it's so important for this franchise to really be realistic in the idea that best case scenario, next year, you're a bubble playoff team. That's the best case scenario after what we've seen here the last 2 years and what you're locked into from a contract basis on this roster already. Best case scenario, you're a bubble playoff team next year. And that means you have to look at moving some of these core pieces and wonder what you can get in return for them.
You have to look at one, I agree, but I'm not looking at the captain as of that right now. There are two tiers when I look at players that
You're only looking at Miller and Brock.
I'm looking at Miller and Besser right now. And yes, you can probably still get a lot based on who they are, based on what JT Miller has been able to do. If his long-term future is not here, you can still get that prospect. You can still address that right-hand side. I'm not touching the captain right now. 2C is something that I think we've taken for granted in this market. Point production, is he a perfect player? Of course not. Yeah. He's not a perfect player. I get there are defensive aspects to his game that are far from developed. There are elements to his game, like the penalty kill, that is not there. There is, you know, other elements of his game that are lacking, but he is still an important piece. So I'm not even putting him in that group right now. For me, it's Miller and Besser.
Ponder this one as we go to break. If Horvat is looking for the Nuge contract, 8 years, just over $5 million per, is that something you're interested in? Because I think that's the range of contract you're probably looking at, and potentially even a little bit more on the average annual value. Because Nuge clearly took a discount on the AAV to go a little bit longer, but also, as a guy who's still a point-per-game player, took a little bit of a discount to say, yeah, I'm good playing here with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. is that something that you would do with Bo Horvat? Because if it isn't, then you have to ask yourself about his long-term future with the Vancouver Canucks. I know it seems awfully early to be thinking about that, but you're 23 games into the season, and the Canucks are so far out of a playoff spot that the big picture is all you're talking about. All right, we do have a wrong answers only to get to a little bit later on in the show. We'll continue this GM talk, your texts, your phone calls. You're the Vancouver Canucks' new GM. What's the first move you make? Let us know. It's the People's Show, Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to The People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Still to come, we have a pair of lower bowl seats to the Canucks and Pittsburgh Penguins at some point during the show today. That is Saturday at Rogers Arena. Sidney Crosby coming to town. So we've been talking about the first move you make as new GM of the Vancouver Canucks.
And I want to correct that because we've got a lot of people saying the first move I'd make is hire a president of hockey ops. As a GM, you can't do that. That's on the owner. That's a question for a different day.
So you're firing yourself and then hoping the owner hires a president of hockey ops? Okay.
So let's stick to if you're the GM.
That may not be a move. And I know there's some that are making two or three step moves. Just one. What's your first one? The first move that you make as GM of the Vancouver Canucks. And it's not an easy thought. But I like what you did bring up, Randeep, in the Brock Besser discussion. You know, have the conversation with him. What does that contract look like? Because if you can get Brock at, let's say, 6x6, 6x6.5, maybe even 6x7, then I think it's incumbent to look at it and make the bet that this is just a down year for Brock Besser. You know, player like him, who at his best is near point a game, which he was last year and was in his rookie year, you have to think $6 to $7 million is the going rate for that sort of a player. So it's still the number, and considering you'd be locking him up for all of his prime, may not be the worst idea. But that's a big, big decision you're going to have to make on a player that's really had a down year. Really had a down year.
Yeah, it's not even a blip on the radar. It's a, he's fallen off the map. He's fallen off the radar completely with this season. And that's where, you know, even if you watch some of those games, and even yesterday, where he gets the puck off, man, it doesn't look right. And we've had this conversation with Brock Besser before as well. Is it an injury? Is it not? All of that. We can't really get into that because we don't know. But when you're talking about valuation, it's a tricky conversation because if you're committing long-term dollars, if you're even pondering that in the range of $35 to $40 million over a long-term deal, you want to be kind of sure of the player, or at the very least, you know, two-thirds of the way there. With Brock Besser, we've seen some really good things that we saw last year in a season of just really, you know, being atrocious as a team. You know, there were moments where you're saying, okay, Brock Besser's taking some steps. His 200-foot game is better. He's a better playmaker.
He was the team's best player last year.
He was. But that's why this year you look back at it and say, all right, what's that dollar value? Because people are saying $7 to $7.5 million. If he continues to trend and changes his game and continues to go and progress,
yeah,
you'd be happy to pay him that money as long as there was progress and significant progress. Now,
yeah,
you're not really sure where you stand with the player because there's been good and there's always been a step back, whether it's health or something else. So, Reach, when I'm thinking about committing $35 to $40 million, you do have to look at this player and say, all right, what does the player want? And how do you get a right-handed shot defenseman? What is your best play?
The QO at 7.5, I mean, there's no way you don't sign it.
Yeah. You're not letting somebody walk away, obviously.
There's absolutely no way you don't sign it. So you do have some time here to decide with Brock, but understand it may be a window that you can lock him up at a decent number if you're betting on him making a comeback to the player he was last year and has been earlier in his career. Now, on the Dunbar Lumber text line, a lot of thoughts coming in. A
lot of reaction, man. Especially in the Brock Besser aspect. We got some people that are saying be patient. Yep. Others, not so much. We got saying Brock is, I guess, he's bombing. Move him for a top D, typical Vancouver. Don't pay him the big dollars.
One move, get a tough guy to punch Marchand to the nose multiple times. That's Gord. Gord, keep it simple. I like it.
You know who's a free agent this year? Nicholas Deslauriers. I'm just throwing that out there.
Are you signing Nicholas Deslauriers?
On a 1 to 2 year deal. Why not?
Wow. Okay.
Why, if you want to dress physicality and you want that type of player, stop taking chances on guys and maybe this guy can pan out. Just go get Deslauriers. He's one of the pound-for-pound toughest guys in the league, if that is a priority for your organization.
Another text reminding us that Ron Hextall was instrumental in bringing Brian Burke, into the Penguins organization to work as a president alongside him.
Okay, fair enough.
So maybe there is situations where a GM can bring in the president he wishes to work with.
Very rare, though. Usually it's the president coming in and setting the tone, right?
But that's Hextall kind of understanding he's not really a... Business guy.
Yeah, he's not the big picture person where he, even his time in Philadelphia, he was focused on the future. He was focused on getting the team right in the long term. And that's essentially why there was friction within the organization. They wanted to move quick and Ron Hextall kind of wanted to play it patient. Does that remind you of something? A little bit.
First trade, OEL back to Arizona for Roussel, Beagle, and Louis.
How did this turn into a wrong answers only?
I don't know how this turned into a wrong answers
I think it's
only.
The branding of the show.
I mentioned this before the break. Bo Horvat. So, Bo's long-term future has come into the conversation here as this season has gone so far off the rails. And don't kid yourself. Like, even if the Canucks end up playing, you know, slightly above 500 for the rest of the year, they're still going to be a bottom 10 team in the league. So it's going to be a long slog. They will play better. It still won't mean that they move too much up the standings. But with Bo, of course you want to see him play better. But him being a year and a half out from free agency, his defensive game not developing the way maybe you had hoped, doesn't kill penalties for this team, has some defensive holes in his game, he's a good scorer, good team guy. All of those things apply here with Bo. But how much is he worth? That's the question you have to ask yourself as early as next offseason. And I know this team and this organization has not addressed contracts ahead of time. You know, Tanner Pearson may be the one exception. Of all the players, like, of all the, I like Tanner Pearson, and like, still, of all the guys you've had here, that's the one you addressed the contract early. Anyways, I guess they did it with Thatcher Demko as well. But you have to look at that contract and discuss that with Bo next summer. Because if there is a hesitancy to remain a Vancouver Canuck, not liking the direction, we know he hinted at that last season at the end of the year, but also what's the number going to be? Because if Bo is a 50 to 60 point guy in and around 25 goals every year, like, yeah, that's an offensive production of a second line center that you really like. But the rest of his game hasn't been there. There's a real lack of a top-end center playing on your penalty kill within this group, right? It's really missed. The fact that they're missing Brandon Sutter as much as they are on the penalty kill really, really magnifies Bo Horvat's inability to kill a penalty or this team's lack of trust in Bo to kill penalties. But if that number is the Nuge contract or the Danault contract, is that something you'd be willing to go down the road with Bo?
The Nuge contract, and to remind everybody, that's 5.125
yep.
on a 8-year deal. That was a lengthy one.
Yep. So over $40 million total.
Yeah, you're giving term, but you're taking probably a less than market value to stay because you're getting that money one way or another, right? You're getting it based on term. I like that number. The term bothers me, but we do focus on the deficiencies of Bo Horvat in this market. Which
Nuge kills penalties as well.
He does.
And he's a point per game.
And he's also predominantly a winger these days.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a center, right? Which is when you're playing with Connor McDavid and you're playing with Leon Draisaitl, you have that luxury of being able to pop out on the wing. And he's a good player.
Yeah.
I like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, but we also do understand that, you know, not playing the center position helps him out greatly because he's got two of the best in the game playing alongside him on any given night. And that pops up your numbers. That makes you a little bit more willing to stay for less. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins took less on a yearly basis because he buys into the vision of what the Edmonton Oilers are. So if you're telling me about that number on a 7-year deal for Bo Horvat, let's just say, I would be okay with it. Now, the question I have is, would Bo Horvat be okay with it?
Mm-hmm.
Because what's lacking here in Vancouver right now? That vision.
Yeah.
So Nugent-Hopkins took that money because the water is fixed now in Edmonton. They're not worrying about that anymore. They yeah. look like they're trending towards being a good team, and they showed that last year. Vancouver's in a different spot. Edmonton had some bargaining power. If you were to get that deal for Bo Horvat, I would probably sign up for it. But is that number available to the Canucks because they are a mess right now? Like, A, does the player believe in the vision to sign a discount deal? And the Canucks don't have that leverage.
No.
The Canucks don't have leverage to get less. If anything, they're back at getting paying more. So I would take that deal with Bo Horvat is the question.
Yeah, it's understanding what Bo would want is a hard part of this conversation. And look, I do think Bo likes being the captain of the Vancouver Canucks. He is a good guy to have as one of the faces of your franchise. And he's a damn good hockey player, man. But, and of course there's a but. Is he somebody you could see bringing value on another 6-year deal, 6x6? Danault got 5.5 over 7 years, right?
Yeah.
And he is not the scorer that Bo is, but a guy who's proven to be among the best shutdown center, probably the best shutdown centers right there with Patrice Bergeron in the league. And he's going to score about 40 points, maybe 50 on the top end, but he drives play with the best of them because of how good he is on the defensive side of the puck. And that's just really the big difference because Bo has always been a guy that can score, but how much is he outscoring his matchups at 5-on-5? And with Pearson and Höglander, they've actually been maybe the most consistent 5-on-5 group this team has had, but it still hasn't generated in a ton more than their opponent. So, if at all, and it hasn't. But I think answering that question and saying I'd be willing to go as high as $6 million per with Bo over a long-term deal, let's say between 6, 7, 8 years, that's a tall ask and one that certainly determines the future of this franchise, how you set up your cap beyond that. You can't get backed into this corner of, well, how are we going to replace him if we move on? You have to have contingency plans. And that's one of the big areas of concern that this management group has had for a lot of years, locking into players because they just didn't know what else they could go out there and find.
Yeah, being proactive hasn't been a strong suit. Let's put it that way. That is the key here. We got this text unsigned coming in saying, we've had a bad team for 3 years, and you want to sign these guys to long-term contracts?
That's exactly my point. Thank you.
Okay. And I get that. But one thing we have to acknowledge, though, Reach, is what is the organization's short-term to medium-term plan here? Because we talked about this yesterday. If you're going into a rebuild, yeah, then you can get rid of whoever you want if you're going back into that rebuild. I don't think they want to go back into rebuild. You got Elias Pettersson beyond this year, 2 more years.
Yeah.
You want to be a relevant team. So we can talk about not wanting to sign players to long-term
deals.
You're not going full rebuild.
You're
not getting rid of all three of these guys, is my point.
I know, but you're not going full rebuild, Randy.
Of course.
You can't afford to lose them for nothing either.
No, of course not. But the conversation is that there's going to be market value out there. Can you get value on this player? And sometimes when you sign players in their late 20s, you're going to take an L on a couple years of a deal. Of course, that's the standard now. But who is expendable? Who is not long-term? That's a conversation. I think Bo Horvat is still of value to this team. He busts his ass. Is he an a perfect player? Of course not. But if you look at his age compared to what he brings this team, he's still somebody worth having if he wants to stay on this team. I'm looking elsewhere before I look towards Bo Horvat. So I can understand people saying, you know, listeners and this unsigned texter saying, we've been a bad team for 3 years and you want to sign these players to long-term contracts. Not all of them. But you can't just get rid of everybody either.
Reality is they're getting a long-term contract somewhere. That's why you have to make the decision if it's Vancouver or somewhere else. And that decision has to come as early as next summer. Like, we're already punting on this season. You know, there's no chance they're getting to the playoffs. Bless everybody on that roster that they think there might be. But it's not going to happen. It's just not. So you have to think about long-term and seriously looking at the core of this team,
okay,
and saying, who are my guys and who do I have to make decisions on?
Sure. You
and 100% Bo Horvat is not a lock because of his contract status.
Let me take you before Bo Horvat stepped onto the scene as the player he is now. When they got rid of Kessler,
yep,
they went through Nick Bonino.
Yep.
Didn't work. Ended up being a third-line center, a great, probably one of the better third-line centers in the league of the last decade somewhere else. They traded him for Brandon Sutter. Brandon Sutter was not the second-line center that Jim Benning thought he was. And ideally should have been playing further down the lineup well before the Canucks realized what he was. So if you want to stay relevant and if you're doing a retool, you better be damn sure that you have that contingency plan. Because 50, 60 points in a second-line role, Dustin, they don't just come out of nowhere. Ask the Montreal Canadiens right now. Christian Dvorak has had a god-awful start to the year. They sacrificed points when they had Dano, but at least they had a shutdown center. They let him walk, and they said, all right, fine. Defensively, we're going to be weaker, but Christian Dvorak will give us points. No, he's not. Trading in free agency is not a guarantee. So I get it. He's far from the perfect player, Bo Horvat. But sometimes you got to be careful. You take for granted the production and the effort you're getting from a player. That's all I'm saying.
Looking at, and this factors in to like a lot of things, but looking at the potential unrestricted free agents at center when Bo Horvat comes up, you're looking at Jonathan Toews, Ryan O'Reilly, Jordan Staal, Lars Eller. Like, that's kind of the list.
Maybe Braden Holtby, Jay Beagle, and the gang will give a character reference for the Canucks organization to Lars Eller.
So, Bo is going to be the best unrestricted free agent under the age of 30 at the position. So, if you're going to look at signing any of, like, those guys, like an O'Reilly, Staal, Toews, like they might still be playing and kicking around, maybe signing 1-2 year deal somewhere. O'Reilly will only be 32 and still is a damn good hockey player. But Bo is going to probably be arguably the most coveted center on the market in that free agency class. So that's going to factor in to what his number may end up being. And his agent will know that. And when you go to talk contract, those are going to be big factors. This is the thing. In going through this process as we have through this hour, you realize how difficult the picture is of the future of this team. So when you think about Like, who's on the do not trade list? Randeep, you're coming in and you're saying, who's my list of guys that I'm staying with? Sounds like Bo's on your do not trade list.
Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, for sure.
Yep.
I think we don't even need to really say that.
It's obvious.
Number three on my list, as of today, we're not talking about the offseason, we're not talking about next trade deadline. As of today, that is Bo Horvat. I'm not trading them this year. The Canucks will be a better team if he's on the roster, because do you have prospects coming? Do you have targets to play a top six center role? We can criticize Bo Horvat all we want, but the Canucks organizationally don't have that player. They don't have that player playing in the bottom six that can be elevated. They don't have a player that can you can target in free agency, because that's worked so well for the Canucks in the last number of years. So he is a part of that top three. And I'm going to throw another name on there as well, Connor Garland. With that value that he gives you in terms of a contract,
yeah,
and the effort, the mentality, the skill, Connor Garland has been added to that list for me, because he's going to be, if not already, one of the value deals across the NHL with that contract.
I think you have to say Höglander and Podkolzin are probably on that list.
Sure. You're not getting rid of any young players on this roster.
No.
You need to add more, let alone get rid of them.
They're too valuable to this group. Other than that, I mean, you have guys that are probably closer to untradeable, so you're sticking with them. And Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's been really good this year, like, let's be honest. Tyler Myers, probably very difficult to trade him, especially with the state of the right side of this defense. But maybe you can acquire a young right shot D, and then all of a sudden you're more willing and maybe eating some contract and trading Tyler Myers. Hamonic, I think you would trade Hamonic if you had the opportunity. Pullman, of course you would. Those things are obvious. But I think other than that, everybody's got to be on the table to think about how you could shake up this core and understand where the question marks about who is here long-term remain. And a texter coming in saying, did you just imply that Bo Horvat is better than Ryan O'Reilly? No, I did not. I said Bo would be the best free agent center under the age of 30 in that free agent class. O'Reilly will be into his early 30s at that point.
If you talk about total dollar value in a contract on a 7 or a potentially 8 year deal,
yeah,
who out of those centers you mentioned can actually command a 7 year contract? It's probably Bo Horvat.
It's probably Bo.
Right? Jonathan Toews isn't getting that contract. Yep. Ryan O'Reilly at 32 is going to be a risk. Somebody wants to offer him a 7 year deal until the age of 39, go ahead. But it's unlikely to happen.
He might get like a Pavelski-type deal, you know, like 3-4 years at $7 million per.
Yeah, I would even say even 5 years is potential. But when you're talking about total dollar value, Bo's probably going to make the most money of those guys if they hit free agency.
Yeah.
That's a big if. Some of them might lock in. And Bo might as well. He could as well.
And he, yeah, you know, there will be teams looking at that with Bo. His reputation around the league is still very, very strong. And it should be. Again, he's a really good player, but you know what the ceiling is here, you know, and you've got to aim higher. How do you do that? I think Yannick Hansen said it best on Sportsnet today. We won't play the clip, but essentially saying mediocrity is death. Does no good for anybody. And if you stay with this current group, that's what you're striving for. You've got to think longer term. You've got to think about a higher ceiling and also understand your two big pieces are still Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And they are the biggest reasons for ultimate success within this franchise over everybody else. That is just fact. So that's why I still kind of view almost everybody else as potential trade bait in the if you're looking at making a move eventually, you've got to look at everybody but those two.
We got a couple of texts coming in saying, how could you not include Demko on your non-trade list? Yeah, he's there. Come on.
Yeah.
We watched the game yesterday. We watched the game. He's at unbelievable value. that is such a given that I didn't even want to include him on the list because he's really the only reason some games that the Canucks are relevant.
Thank you for pointing out the obvious oversight there, Adam, the former Bath guy, and some others. It was a great conversation. Continue to have it. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Coming up, David Pignota of the Fourth Period will join us. Jack Hughes locks in to the New Jersey Devils. And what's next for Jake DeBrusk and the Montreal Canadiens? Who's on their shopping list, at least on the way out? It's the People's Show. You're listening on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.